important inspiration coming from ADS-CFT for understanding this entanglement stuff. Today we will study, as I told you, a particular shape, a circle. A circle is a very special shape. And for these shapes, there are very powerful techniques, which are called localization. So localization is something, sometimes when you have a supersymmetric theory, it happens that you are doing your path integral to compute some quantity. And you think, okay, I have to sum over all possible configurations, and this path integral is a huge mess. But sometimes it's possible to use what's called localization. And localization means that out of all these possible configurations of the path integral, only a very special subclass contributes. You can think it's like if the other ones all cancel each other. And only a very, very special class contributes. This means that the path integral is localized into a very particular subset of configurations. And this is something which has been developed very recently. For example, the circular loop that today we will compute, we will argue that we can compute it for any coupling. The proof, the real honest proof, was only done in 2007, and I encourage you to try to do this exercise, which is challenging, about trying to exactly prove this expectation value of this Wilson loop to all loops. And for example, Simone Giombi and again Jome at PI are great specialists, and they can tell you that there are other shapes, not only the circle, but other very funny shapes of Wilson loops moving in spheres and so on, which are exactly solvable by localization. Wilson loops are also related, when we take polygon shapes, they are also related to scattering amplitudes. As I told you, and in one of the exercises, you can really check explicitly. Do some one loop computation of Wilson loop, open a scattering amplitude paper and say, wow, exactly the same. Indeed, it works. And until December or something like this, or until, not December, but until very recently, like last September, people have no clue how to do it for supersymmetric Wilson loops. Still, Dave Skinner and collaborators here, for example, showed here is the super loop, here is how you do it if you want all scattering amplitudes. Scattering amplitudes are beautifully related to Grassmannians and very important new structures that are now appearing, which Freddy is a big specialist on, also here at PI. And to study these polygon Wilson loops, recently we have been starting a program where we think of these Wilson loops as describing, pick two lines of the Wilson loop. Think of these two lines as being a quark and an antiquark, which source a flux tube. And think of the bottom and top of the Wilson loop as creating excitations. They propagate in the flux tube and they are absorbed in the top and the bottom. And this picture led to a completely different way of computing loops that I might have time to comment on a bit at the end of today's lecture, which seems right now to be the most efficient way of computing these scattering amplitudes by this Wilson loop scattering amplitude correspondence. And I've been doing this with Amit Sever, for example, here at PI. So, okay, this is just some motivation for you to see that not only these Wilson loops are very exciting quantities to study classical problems like confinement, propagation of particles in magnetic fields and so on, in the presence of gauge fields and so on, but they are also very exciting research problems right now, very closely related to some very exciting activity going on. Very good. Questions? So let's... Can I erase? Good. So let me remind you of two results that we found during these lectures. So first, we saw that the integral over random matrices of trace of e to the m, this was a toy model that we started, e to the minus 2 over g square trace of m square was equal to some Laguerre polynomial, and when you expanded you got this Bessel function, right? Was equal to some Laguerre polynomial. Okay, this is not really crucial, but let's write. So 1 over n L 1 n minus 1 of minus g square over 4 e to the g square over 8. And this was equal to 2 over square root lambda Bessel function of square root lambda plus 1 over n squared times another function of lambda plus da da da. Okay, good. We saw this. Another thing that you saw, by the way, I want to ask you, how did you do yesterday? You saw that the expectation value of the Wilson loop in n equals 4 super young Mills at strong coupling for the circle is equal, is proportional. There is a prefactor that you cannot estimate from this computation, but the important part is the exponent e to the plus square root of lambda. Did you get this yesterday? Yeah? Did it work out okay? Did you got this with these correct factors and so on? Awesome, very good. Okay, good. So this is the second thing I want to keep in mind. And lastly, I want to remind you that what was the definition of the Wilson loop in n equals 4? It was the average of the trace of the path order exponential of... let me write with the correct factors of I and so on. Okay. Of a mu, which goes on some curve x of t, x dot mu of t, and then there was plus a term which makes this guy finite, plus I, this I was important to get the minus 1, phi I, okay, I said I could choose this theta to be just 1, 0, 0, 0, so let this scalar be just phi 1, times absolute value of x dot, sorry, phi 1 at the point x of t, absolute value of x dot of t, all this dt. And this was the definition of the supersymmetric Wilson. Okay. Questions here? Are there any questions about the tutorial, about what I wrote here? So stuff that we saw before. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why we know that when we do that conformal transformation, we get a minimal problem?
Because conformal symmetry is a symmetry of the equations of motion. Because it's a symmetry of the space-time where the string lives. So if you apply this isometry of the space, you go from a solution of the equation of motion to another solution of the equation of motion. So if your infinite straight plane was a solution to the equation of motion, after you map it through an isometry, you get another solution of the equation of motion. If you want, yeah, because... yeah, that's it. More? Yes?
In the top line you have an n, is that n equals 4n?
No, this is a matrix model. What do you mean? There is nothing about n equals 4. So these matrices are n by n. And here, when I write lambda, this lambda is g square n. Yes? Sorry? Ah, yes, of course. Sorry. More? Okay, very good. So let's compute this Wilson loop. So let me remind you. Let me remind you what this Wilson loop is. So this W is equal to the sum over n from 0 to infinity, I'm just expanding the exponential, but in this path-ordered way, of integral... Okay. So now, as we said, we are going to compute the circle. Okay? So this is what we are going to do now. So then I parameterize my circle by an angle. So the integral goes from 0 to 2 pi. This would be dt1. The integral dt2 goes from 0 to t1, dot, 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 and then the integral dt2n, and you'll see why am I writing 2n and not n, goes from 0 to t 2n minus 1. And then I have my expectation value of the trace of, I think there is an I missing here, sorry. You remember before for the gauge field there was I, so there is an I there missing, sorry. I A, let me simplify the notation and call this stuff curly A, and let me call this stuff without the I, this small phi, so that I don't need to write it all the time. So this would be I curly A plus phi evaluated at T1, I A plus phi evaluated at T2n, and that's it. Okay, so I just summed over the odd, the even ones. You could sum over the odd ones, but the average of an odd number of fields is zero. So you can just sum over this guy. Okay, no. I'm sorry. No, this is incorrect. So, okay, this is incorrect. So, sorry. Let's ignore the 2n. For now, let's think of it. This expression is the one I'm going to use, but think of this as n. Let's, in a moment, let's see that this is actually correct, but naively, you would say that these guys, there is no reason for the odd ones not to contribute, because now we also have diagrams like this stuff, right? So a priori, the odd ones could also contribute. Sorry, what I said is not correct. Okay, very good. So this is equal to 1 plus, and then comes, so the first one that you need 2 points. So you need a circle. And this guy, you can have the gluon propagating, plus you can have the scalar propagating. Okay? So the average of this IA plus phi at some point T1 with the average of IA plus phi at some point T2, as we saw last time, is equal to, and now I'm using the normalization where I don't put coupling before the A. If I don't put coupling before the A, the coupling appears in the propagator. Like in these matrix models, you remember, we either put the coupling in the propagator or in the vertices. You can trust me with the coupling factors and then check carefully that it's okay. Then what we get when we compute the average of this trace is we get g square n, this is because of the trace, 4 pi square, this is because of the propagator. Then there is here x of t1 minus x of t2, the absolute value square. And then there is, because of the a's, there is an x dot of t1 dot x dot of t2. And because of the scalars, remember, there is absolute value of x dot of t1 times absolute value of x dot of t2. Okay, and with the signs, because I put an I here, there is an overall minus here. Okay, cool. So let's compute this guy for the circle. So I did not do it. I know what the result is. So let's hope I get it right. So let's do it. So for the circle, x of t will be equal to equal to r, and then we can write cosine of t, sine of t, 0, 0. So x dot of t is equal to r minus sine of t, cosine of t, 0, 0. So x of t1 minus x of t2 square is equal to, oof, this is too boring. Okay, so this is equal to lambda over 16 pi square, where this stuff is lambda. Okay? I hope you agree that this is too painful, right? Do you want me to finish? I mean, I can compute this distance square and so on, etc. Right? Okay. And this is highly remarkable. It's very remarkable. It's a constant. You see? It's a constant. That's why this computation is a bit fun to do, because you really see that you get the same t dependence up and down, it cancels, and you get just a constant. That's quite neat. Okay, that's very simple. So it means that the sum of these two graphs, this propagator between here, is just a constant. So now I just need to integrate a constant, and that just gives me a factor of 2 pi square from integrating this constant. And therefore, or 2 pi times pi. So these diagrams here give me just 1 plus lambda over 16 pi square, and then you integrate a constant, and that gives a factor of 2 pi square. This is from the integrations. Just the volume. That is, this is equal to 1 plus lambda over 8. And okay, cool. So the Wilson loop, the one loop order, is just a number, 1 plus lambda over 8. Okay, so I just computed it. It's actually easy to do this computation, right? It's more or less obvious. Here you get x dot dot x dot, you get cosine, sine, sine, cosine. Yeah, it's just some of those trigonometric identities. Okay. Any question here? Could everyone reproduce this? Right? So the propagator. So what happens is that this, we can draw this as some super propagator. Let's use some different color. When we say that we have either the gluon or this guy, it's like the propagator for this combination. So this propagator is just equal to lambda over 16 pi square. Okay? A constant. This is the important thing is that it's a constant. When we computed this rectangle, for example, it was not a constant. It was not so trivial to do. Okay, very good. So how do we do now? Let's move on. Let's continue. This is one loop. Let's do two loops. So we have two loops. Yes? The empty circle is the one. If you want, I mean, it's a question of what you call notation, but it's the one. When n is equal to zero, you would say that there's nothing going on. The particle just goes around, no quantum processes. You can draw whatever you want for this. It's just a picture, but yeah, you can draw it as an empty circle. So, what happens at two loops? Well, at two loops, let's see. So, let's draw our circle. We have first, we have these diagrams, for example, like this, and this, plus this and this, with a gluon and then a scalar, plus two scalars. In other words, these diagrams are nothing but two superpropagators. Okay? Two of these superpropagators here. One like this, one like this. Okay? So these diagrams are very simple. Okay? Those are simple. And we will compute them in a moment. Then there are other diagrams which appear at this loop order. There are then diagrams where I have, say, a gluon interacting with a gluon, interacting with a gluon. These ones that I told you that somehow we were going later to tell that they are not important, and I'm about to tell you why. We can also have a scalar going from the boundary, interacting with a gluon, say. We can also have corrections, gluons, and then a loop of gluons. We can have many diagrams, but not that many. We can have, for example, a gluon, and then a scalar loop. We can have a scalar loop radiatively corrected by some gluon line. So what do these diagrams have in particular that these ones don't? What distinguishes these diagrams from this one here? How would you give me some simple rule to say to distinguish this first three from this last five? Sorry? Okay, actually, yeah. But not only, yeah. I could also have this one with a four vertex here. This I would also put here. But what distinguishes is that these diagrams, they have bulk vertices. They have vertices in the bulk of the loop. Okay? So these diagrams, they contain bulk vertices. These vertices here. So, Kostya Zarembo and friends, Kostya who was teaching you, computed these diagrams. They computed this. The computation that I'm describing was actually done by them. They did it. And they found something nice for these diagrams. They sum up to zero. The guys with vertices. Okay? So if you do this computation, I thought of putting it as one of the homeworks, but I found it was too painful. These guys, so this stuff, they sum to zero for the circle. You see, you compute all these guys, there are very nice cancellations. At the end of the day, these guys give zero. Okay, this is a two-loop computation, so it means that at two loops, we have, so let's, so up to two loops, we have that the Wilson loop is 1 plus sorry, 1 second. Okay, let me try. So, plus lambda over 16 pi square. This was this propagator here. So, this now I'm drawing this guy here. And then it's just a constant, and I need to integrate over my volume. I told you what the result is this, where is it? I just erased it. It's this 2 pi square. But how do we see what it is? It's 2 pi square if they were both up to 2 pi, both integrals. But because it's only half of the integration region, we divide by 2 factorial. And this is this 2 pi square that I wrote before. In this case, this lambda over 8. Plus, okay, let's draw now the two loops. We have this guy. We have this guy. So we have two propagators, lambda over 16 pi square. Then we have four integration variables. So we get 2 pi to the 4 over, but four variables, but they are ordered. So it's only 4 factorial of this. Okay? Yeah? So, and this is equal plus dot dot dot, and this is equal to 1 plus, let me write it in the following way, or let me see, so pi square 4 lambda over 4 times 1 over 2 factorial plus lambda over 4 square times 1 over 4 factorial plus dot dot dot. Okay. Is this okay for everyone? Okay. So we did we have a two-loop computation. Of course, I did not do all these diagrams, but I did those. And this diagram, this is what they give for this circle Wilson loop. Now, what do you propose now to do next? If you were bold, if you felt like you want to risk, and to try something, why not? Let's try something. What could you try? Or what would you guess? Let's go to three loops now. If we would go to three loops, again, there are diagrams with bulk vertices and diagrams without bulk vertices. And then you might say, could it be that, again, the bulk vertices, since this cancellation is so non-trivial, it's really like a miracle that you get such cancellation between the bulk vertices, could it be, so you can ask maybe, all we have is 1 plus this guy, maybe just what are called rainbow diagrams, this guy, plus, and then at three loops, you just say, okay, maybe plus, but now you would have also more diagrams, you would also have, it's cool to draw. Five diagrams. So, okay, so this would be one loop, there's only one diagram. Two loops, there's only this diagram. This, the one where it is like this, it's the same, of course, it's just this line going here. And then this is our guess. This is our conjecture for three loops. Right. Okay, so I might... Yeah, this might be wrong. So let's see. So who am I forgetting? I'm confused now. Let me see. So I forgot some diagram then. Not good. Help me out. So which one did I forget? Okay, let me think. Now I'm confused. Wait. Now let me see. So, right. So you are totally right, but I'm also right. So the point is that this is wrong, because here. Indeed. So what do I mean by these pictures? I mean that I write my product of four fields, and then I do weak contractions. So think that I'm doing this integral. So there is a starting point, 0 to 2 pi, and there is t1, then there is t2, then there is t3, and then there is t4. Okay? So for the purpose of counting weak contractions, yes. Yes, so I only count the planar contractions, but I should count all planar contractions. So the way I should think about this with contractions is the following. I have my T1, I have my segment, and then, so let's say this is a segment, and then T1 is somewhere here, T2 is smaller than T1, so there is T1 here, then there is T2, then there is T3, and then there is T4. Okay? This is how the T's are ordered. And now I want to recontract this in a planar way. How can I contract this in a planar way? I can do this, or I can do this, right? So just weak contraction. So T1 contracts with T2, T3 with T4. So I have four fields, these two contract here, these two contract here, or the middle two and the last two, this and this. Okay? So what means that here I forgot a diagram, plus this diagram, I should indeed draw it. This one and this one. So the best to count the diagram is indeed to think that there is this order. In other words, I can open a bit my loop for counting purposes and not let you do what you wanted to do. Okay? Then I don't overcount. Okay? And now again here, I open a bit. And now you cannot do what you wanted to do. And here, indeed, it's wrong. I add one more diagram. Thank you. Very good point. So here, I should also say plus this diagram. Then, it means that here, I forgot there are two such diagrams, so I forgot a 2. And there is then a 2 here. Okay? So this one and this 2 are the number of diagrams. The number of rainbow diagrams. Very good point. Very good. So, okay. Any question? Is it clear? Is the counting clear? So, we have this order, we are doing with contractions. The best way to count is to open that, to mark T1 up to Tn in an ordered way, and then we do with contractions in a planar way. Yeah? So, very good. Thank you for paying attention. And now, as we said, we conjecture. Could this be that all we have to do is these rainbow diagrams? I mean, if we are lazy, this is a good conjecture to make. I'm not saying that Kostya is lazy. He might see this online, but but he is certainly very bold and very brave, and he made this conjecture. So Kostya said, maybe life is good, and maybe only rainbow diagrams contribute. And again, this is based on this very remarkable cancellation that he saw at two loops. So, okay, if this is the case, so you see that the next term, what would be the next term? It would be lambda over 4 to the power 3 at three loops, and then 5 over 6 factorial, because now you integrate over 6 points with an order, and 5 is the number of rainbow diagrams. Plus dot dot dot. So this is nothing but the sum, okay, if we believe this conjecture, from n equals 0 up to infinity, lambda over 4 to the n, okay, number, let's call this number a n over 2n factorial, where a n is equal to the number of rainbow diagrams, the rainbow diagrams with n lines, which, as we saw, it's equal to, so a of 0 is equal to 1. That is just the empty stuff, as Shane said, nothing. It's just the 1, just the empty circle with nothing. A of 1 is 1. A of 2 is 2, as you've corrected me very well. A of 3 is 5, etc. Okay. So, you see that if this conjecture is true, then this formula is okay. Because then, indeed, if we only have letters, we can only have an even number of fields. Right? Or if we only have letters, the letter must start at one point and go to another point, and there is a finite number of lines, there is always an even number of fields. So the formula that we are conjecturing is that the expectation value of the Wilson loop is given by this, where we only consider ladder diagrams. Okay? I added ladder here. This is the conjecture, roughly. Roughly, no, precisely. Yes. Rainbow. Yeah. Ladder or rainbow, it's synonyms. Yeah. In this context. Yeah, good. Rainbow diagram. Okay. So, for example, an idea so we want to compute this A of n. This is our goal, right? So we want to find A of n. For example, we want to find the generating function f of z, which is defined as sum of a of n z to the n from n equal to 0 up to infinity. If we could find this function, we would just read the coefficients and know how many rainbow diagrams there are. Okay? Okay, very good. So, let me give you a few minutes while I turn on the projector to try to come up with what is the rule. How many rainbow diagrams are there with n legs? So, you have like two minutes or 1 minute. Can I lower it or are you copying? Okay, I can turn it on while you finish copying, if you can still. Good. Okay. Any clue for what the idea could be? So we have 1, 1, 2, 5. Any guess for the next one? Okay. Can I ask some volunteers to go there and draw the four loops, how many diagrams we have? To try to draw how many we have? Maybe two people you can draw and then see how many?
I'll draw the diagrams on the board.
Okay, good. Four loops now with four lines. Yeah, sure. Yeah. In the meantime, someone has any guess for how could we try to compute it? Yes.
Well, you can, you're going to have 8 of the 2 points that you're going to connect.
8? Yes, 8, yeah.
So you can make a loop between 2 nearest neighbors, and then there'll be 5 ways that you can connect the other points, because that is the same place as connecting 2 loops.
Can try to make a guess for the number then? So in the meantime, this is not working. Okay, so you have more than 1 minute apparently. You'll need more space. 25, very good, it's wrong. Yeah, it's correct. Very good, yeah, Ether said it correctly. Yeah. But let's see, by the way. It's fine, no space. So let's see, you'll need considerably more space. No, not a lot. You will have enough space. Very good. So it's working here. So we want to find that generating function. What's the best way to find the generating function? Ask Mathematica. Mathematica, please find the generating function. Given that the numbers are 1, 1, 2, and 5, please do it. And Mathematica tells you the result. And now we say, okay, is this really correct? So this is our f of z. And then we say, okay, expand please f of z from z equals 0 up to 4. And here is the 14 that Ether said it would be. Okay? So Mathematica got it right. It was good. And if we want to count how many rainbows there are with 14, this is what Mathematica would tell you. So it's good that I did not ask anyone to draw the 5 loops. It's 42 diagrams, and very soon it will be 2 million diagrams at some point. Okay, so what happened? Ah, good. Now, so can I zoom out a bit? It's too big. Okay, good. So how would you do if you want really an analytic expression for this a of z? You would say, okay, first let me write f of z in a way that I like more. So this seems okay. So the way we would trust this is to do exactly what we said. Let's compute 4 loops, and if we get 14 diagrams, we say, okay, Mathematica probably guessed correctly. And indeed, this is what Elizabeth will show, that we'll have 14 diagrams, and indeed we will be happy. But let's ask then, what is the general form of A of n? So for that, let me first write, I prefer square roots upstairs, I don't like square roots downstairs. And then I say, okay, so what is the series coefficient of this guy for expanding around 0? What is the nth guy? And this is what it is. So it's this binomial function. So this is the number of rainbow diagrams for any n. Okay? And we can say, we can teach Mathematica that please simplify this, assuming that n is bigger than minus 1. Because, I mean, n is at least 0. Simplify. And we can function expand to give us this in terms of functions that we know better, some gamma functions. Okay? Cool. So this is what we would guess. This would be our function a of n. Okay? A of n equal to this. Am I going too fast? Huh? This would be a of n, and now we can apply a to a range of numbers from 0 to 10, and this would be the number of rainbow diagrams. Okay, very good. 14. Let's see how Elizabeth is doing. How many do you have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And you are missing one. You are missing one, which is... Not the reflection of this, when this guy is on this side. Ah, sorry. Uh-huh. Good. So that's not missing. Uh-huh. Okay. The reflection of the two before last. Ah, very good. Very good. Awesome. So these are the 14 diagrams. Very good. Very good. Okay. This is not perfect. I want to show you something else that you should do. When you will be doing research, you will find this is very useful. And another very useful thing is this website, which is called the Online Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences. And you can also ask this website, what is the sequence for 1125? Okay. And you click enter, or you click search, and it will tell you, it should. So it gives you 1,000 possible sequences, okay, because indeed 1125, I mean, it's not really that many, but the most likely one is Catalan numbers. And Catalan numbers, according to this website, is just this binomial of 2n, n over n plus 1. In other words, in terms of factorials, is this. 2n factorial over n factorial, n plus 1 factorial. Okay? If we tell her that, okay, and the next one is 14, because we just checked in the blackboard, then there will be only 120 sequences that she finds reasonable, that this website finds, and still the first one is the Catalan numbers. But the Catalan numbers, you see, according to this website, is even simpler than what we found. It's just 2n factorial over n factorial times n factorial plus 1. So let's check in Mathematica that this is equivalent to what we found. So this is what the website tells us. Let's see that a of n is equal to this. So we divide and we say, please simplify, knowing that n is an integer. What happened? Integers, full simplify, and it's 1. Okay? So a of n is just given by this, 2n factorial over n factorial, n plus n factorial, n plus 1 factorial. Okay? So this is the number of rainbow diagrams. Okay? So, this is cool, but it's also cool to... I just wanted to show you this. Let me keep it open because I'm going to use it in a minute, again. Okay, let's send it up and come back to it. In 1 minute. So here are the nice 14 diagrams. This was really awesome. And now we know what a of n is, but let's resist the temptation of plugging it and seeing what the result is. Let's resist this temptation and let's derive this. Okay? It was cool to do this in Mathematica, but let's derive this. So, any idea for how to do it? No. You saw what the result is. It was this 2n factorial over n factorial, n plus 1 factorial. You don't go from one to the other by doing that. Sorry? 5 times 3 minus 4. Still. So let's see. So let's do the following. Let's count them in this way. So the way of counting them, the nicest way of counting them, is by thinking in the following way. So first we have this open structure. So we want to compute some a n a of n plus 1, where I have this line and here I have n plus 1 lines. rainbows with n plus 1 lines. Okay? And the claim is that this is nothing but the following. Whenever we have the diagrams, we can always write this in the following way. Sum over k equal to 0 up to n. And then there's always n minus k rainbows here. Then k rainbows here. And then an extra line. Let's draw it in yellow. Separating the two. Okay? Right? So whenever we have n plus 1 rainbows, what I'm saying is that I can have, say, no rainbow here, and then I have a big rainbow which encapsulates everyone else. These are those cases where I have no rainbow, and then I have this big rainbow here. Vroom, or this one here. Then I can have one rainbow, and then one rainbow encapsulating everyone else. So where is that? This one. One rainbow, and then one rainbow encapsulating everyone else. Then I can have two rainbows here, and then one rainbow encapsulating everyone else. Same like this one. Two rainbows, and one rainbow encapsulating everyone else. And so on. Okay, cool. So this means that an plus 1 is equal to the sum k equal to 0 up to n, a of n minus k, a of k. Okay, this is it. This is the recursion relation. So it's not as trivial as the one that you were proposing. This is it. Now, if you think for a bit, what happens if I pick this function here, square it? Please pay attention to this. Look at this function f, square it, and pick one power of z. Okay? When you square it and pick one power of z, that power of z is multiplied by a sum of a times a, such that the sum of arguments sums to n, exactly like here. Was this fast? Yes? So you have... Okay, we can do it. So f square is equal... So let's compute f square of z. Okay? F square of z is equal to... sum, and then, okay, it's equal to plus, and now I want some power z to the n. That power z to the n plus ... comes multiplied by who? It can be, for example, a of n times a of 1. It can be a of n minus 1 times a of 2. So it will be in total sum from k equal to 0 up to n, a of k, a of n minus k. Right? Just the cross term. Very good. What is, then, f of z? Give me 1 second. Let me write the equation. I forgot now the detail, but let's see. So if I multiply this guy by z, right, then here I get n plus 1. On the other hand, f of z is equal to ... plus z to the n plus 1 times a of n plus 1 by definition. Okay. Right? But this guy starts at z, plus, right? Why does it start at z? Because the leading term when z is equal to 0 is a of 0, which is 1, and you multiply by z, so it starts at z. Whereas this guy, f of z, starts at 1. So they are almost the same, except that this one starts, this one is 1 plus z plus dot dot dot, and this one starts at z. Right? Everyone follow that now? And therefore, we just found the nice equation that z times f square of z is equal to f of z minus 1. Okay? And this implies that f of z is equal to 1 minus square root 1 minus 4z over 2z. This was Mathematica's guess. It was good. And this is nothing but the sum, if you expand, from n equals 0 to infinity of 2n factorial over n factorial n plus 1 factorial z to the n. And these are this an, which are the Catalan numbers. Right? Yes. Because if I good, so I could choose here minus or plus, but I don't want it to diverge when z goes to 0. It must have a regular expansion when z goes to 0. So if I wanted to start at 1, I must choose this sign. Okay? So as Trevor said, so I pick this sign here to get f of 0 equal to 1. Okay, cool. So this is a nice way. It should be used whenever you want to count stuff. Generating function is always great. Find some recursion relation, write it as an equation for the recursion, for the degenerating functional, and solve it. Okay, very, very nice. By the way, let me go back and just show you that. Okay, I think, can you still see this here? So, okay, so that this might be better. If you see this website, I just wanted to show you that it tells you not only what these Catalan numbers are, but it also tells you some examples of where they might appear. And if you see the second example, it says here, number of ways to insert n pairs of parentheses in a word with n plus 1 letters. This is exactly, basically, the way we are thinking. We are thinking this rainbow is like putting parentheses in words and so on. So it's exactly this kind of thing. So if you see, he computed these 5 ways. So they did the 3-loop circular Wilson loop here. This 5 is the 3-loop circular Wilson loop that we saw. Okay, very good. So now we know what a of n is, right? We know what a of n is. A of n is this, right? Oops. A of n is this. What should we do? We need to sum a of n divided by 2n factorial, lambda over 4 to the n, and we get the Wilson loop. So we need to divide by 2n factorial, so we remove this. Right? We have this. The 2n factorial went away. There is here lambda over 4 to the n. And we need to sum this from n equals 0 to infinity. Any guess what we will get? No? Okay. Ta-da-da. We get our Bessel function there. Okay? So we get exactly this Bessel function that we got in the first matrix model. Okay. That's cute. Let's see why. Ah. Okay. So basically, what Mathematica just told us is that then, therefore, the Wilson loop is the sum lambda over 4 to the n, we put a n, the factorials cancel, 1 over n factorial, n plus 1 factorial, and what is this? This is just 2 over square root lambda, Bessel function of square root lambda. Right? Okay. Yes? This is all this was for the circular Wilson loop, right? You remember that what are we doing here? We are just these superpropagators, which are constants. And that's why all this stuff just counts diagrams. All these propagators, they are just constants, right? You remember, how did we write this result? It was just this propagator times this propagator gives this factor, which is just a constant. And the volume of integration is 2 pi to the 4, 4 points, divided by 4 factorial, because they are ordered. So just constant, and then you integrate a constant over 1 over factorial of the total volume. Okay, very neat. Now, we could have guessed that this should this ought to work. Because what we are doing is the propagator doesn't depend on distance, so it's exactly like, so who cares where it ends? It's like exactly in the matrix model. So our propagator is just a constant, and it doesn't matter where it ends. In other words, these diagrams that I draw here, I could have drawn these diagrams, if this is the picture, I could have drawn this as going from this point to this point. Who cares that they are not the same? The propagator is constant. Right? The propagator is constant. And then we divided this by 1 over 2 factorial. This guy, again, we could have drawn it like this, or like this. And we multiply this by 1 over 4 factorial. Right? Is this clear? But then, what is this? But what, on the other hand, what is the average of this e to the m that we were writing? This is the average of 1 plus m squared over 2 factorial plus m cubed over 3 factorial plus m4 over 4 factorial plus dot dot dot. From the matrix model point of view. But what is this? This is 1 plus 0, the average of m, plus 1 over 2 factorial times this contraction of matrix with matrix, as you saw, plus 0, because we have odd, plus 1 over 4 factorial times the two possible matrix diagrams, this one plus this one, for this m to the 4 here, plus dot, dot, dot. So it's the same thing. The matrix model is exactly computing these rainbow diagrams, this exponential of m. You see? With 1 over the two, the odd factorial and so on. Okay? Yes?
Just a clarification.
Sure.
This result is supposed to be not for any
one. Awesome. Very good comment. Let's come to back to it in 2 minutes. It's correct. But let's postpone a minute, that for a minute. You see, is everyone happy that indeed what this matrix model computes, what I just told you here, is that this guy here is, it's this picture here, is that this matrix model at each order is just counting the number of rainbow diagrams. Okay? The average of e to the m is precisely this guy precisely does precisely this. Okay? Or it does precisely this. Right? Precisely what this does. It puts 1 over 2n factorial, some coupling to the n, because there was some coupling here, and then number of rainbow diagrams. 1 here, 2 here, 5 next, and so on. Okay? Okay, so this is an example where instead of doing all these rainbow diagrams and so on, as soon as we saw that the propagator was constant, we could have said, oh, this is a topological computation. It's in practice zero-dimensional. Let's use the matrix model. The result is Bessel function. So I could have told you the final result half an hour earlier. Right? Very good. Now there are two natural questions that you might ask. So, one first, large lambda, as Ricard said. When lambda is large, now that we solved it at any lambda, we can in principle study it at large lambda. Let me emphasize again that what we did is really, if this is correct, this was a conjecture, but if this was correct, this is really absolutely remarkable. We just managed to, in a four-dimensional field theory, to compute something at any value of the coupling. You can expand it at weak coupling and get the perturbative. You can expand it at strong coupling, and you have just, in general, a function which interpolates between weak and strong coupling. Here is the full result of something computed in a field theory at any value of the coupling. It's probably the first time you saw, I imagine, unless you saw it before coming to Psi. And at large lambda, this I1 of square root of lambda, 2 over square root of lambda, behaves as lambda to some power. This is irrelevant. But then the interesting part is that it behaves exactly as it should, e to the plus square root of lambda. And this, if you want, is the first highly non-trivial check of this conjecture. Because if we do believe ATS-CFT, this was exactly what you said the result had to be. Exponential plus square root of lambda. If you don't like ATS-CFT, you can say, okay, this is, I'm a bit more confident, I should still prove this. Right? But this is a very good indication. The fact that we get exactly, so this is exactly what is expected from computing this minimal surface. This was exactly the area that you computed. The second question that you might ask is, well, in the matrix model, we got something even better. So we got something here that was valid not only for planar graphs, but it was valid at any coupling and any n. So you can ask, is even better the full solution? Exclamation mark, question mark. And the answer is yes. The non-planar, with all non-planar graphs, everything, that is the full result for the circular Wilson loop. Okay? That required, and that is, that was, so first, the history was, first Kostya, Zarembo, and collaborators conjectured that this was the result for all the planar diagrams, this Bessel function. So what was the logic? They saw that these nice two-loop cancellations and conjectured them to hold for any loop, and therefore we summed this as we did. So they did what we did today. Then David Gross and Drucker said that rederived this result with another technique. And what they did was they used the fact that the circle and the infinite line are related by a conformal transformation to map a line to a circle. And then they saw, under a transformation that maps a line to a circle, what happens to a Wilson loop. Naively, could think nothing should happen because it's a symmetry. But something happens, and there is a conformal anomaly at infinity. And you, studying this anomaly, you see that you should get exactly this. And actually, you know that something happened because in the tutorial, you computed the expectation value of the line and of the circle, and they were not the same. And when they did this study using this anomaly, they did not see anything special about large n, and therefore they conjectured that this matrix model should give the full result at any n. Now this was, I think it's fair to say, very much not solid at all. So it was, a proof was lacking. This was around 2000, I think. I think this was in 2000. And in 2007, Vasily Peston proved that what happens is that he proved this result rigorously. And the way he did it is really beautiful, and the basic idea is that you are computing your expectation value of your Wilson loop. So you are computing the expectation value of exponential of a matrix times the action. And then he showed by localization that only very particular configurations dominate this path integral. So what happens is that what configurations contribute? Only those where the scalar phi 1 is a constant. All other fields are zero. So you see that your path order exponential of e to the gauge field plus scalar becomes just exponential of matrix, if this is true. Exponential of matrix is this. Then, okay, he's a serious guy, so he says R4 is for babies. If you want to do it properly, let's put it in S4 so that it's compact, and he studies n equals 4 in S4. Okay, it's conformally equivalent to this. When you put a theory in S4, it becomes curved, and then the scalars, they couple to the curvature via the Ricci scalar. Right? This is when you do when you put a theory in a curved background. And when you evaluate the matrix for, when you evaluate the action for constant phi field, what happens? All the other fields are zero. So f mu nu is zero, psi is zero, derivatives of phi are zero, commutator of phi is zero because only phi 1 is non-zero, except this guy that I told you that you turn on, Ricci scalar times phi square, because it's in S4. Only that you keep from the action. So it's phi 1 square times some constant. This is this. Phi 1 square times some constant. And then you integrate over M. That's it. So, it's really a beautiful proof to show that only these configurations dominate. The idea is to add some stuff to the action that you know cannot change the result, and then send some parameter to infinity. It's really cute. I encourage you to try to simplify this derivation, which is, he did much more than this in his paper, so if you really focus only on this, you should be capable of really simplifying it and getting a very beautiful story out of it. Then there are many checks that one can do. If we have a formula which is valid at any n, we can check many dualities of string theory and of field theory, S-duality, take n large, take n big, and there are many, many beautiful checks of string theory and string field theory, even to some, in some sense, using this formula, which go well beyond the scope of these lectures. And if you want, this was the first quantity, I think, first non-trivial quantity, which was not protected, and therefore which depends on Tuft coupling, that was ever computed in a four-dimensional field theory that interpolates between two values. It's a very interesting quantity, but, okay, these diagrams are still not the kind of diagrams that we argued in the very beginning, these beautiful planar diagrams that generate these strings and so on. This still look like a very, very particular class of diagrams. And if you want, this is the toy model for exact solvability in n equals 4. And right now, we can compute exactly quantities which go way beyond this simplified object, which have these huge cancellations. We can compute two-point functions of any operator at any value of the coupling, for example. And this is highly non-supersymmetric, highly all diagrams that contribute. The world should really look like strings. And as I told you, if you want to learn more about exactly solvable structures in n equals 4 and how to... and about this program of trying to exactly solve four-dimensional gauge theories, which is something very exciting, I mean, which is going on right now, and we might be close to solving for the very first time a four-dimensional gauge theory, and if so, this is, in my opinion, extremely exciting times for physics. And if you want to learn more, you can, on the one hand, try to, as I said, I gave many lectures on integrability in ADS-CFT at perimeter, and there's always an annual conference on integrability and gauge and string theory, so you can go to the website of those previous conferences and see the talks, and from there start learning more about this subject, which includes Wilson loops, scattering amplitudes, correlation functions, and so on. It's more formal aspects of idea of gauge theories. Okay, about the homeworks, just two words about the homework. So what am I proposing for the homeworks? So in the first homework, the idea is to study the wavy line and the wavy circle. So the wavy circle and the wavy line, instead of a line, you have a line and you have some small ripples on this line. So it's a line written by someone slightly drunk. So it oscillates a bit. And you can argue what the form of the result should be for any value of the coupling. And then you can check it at one loop, at two loops, and start seeing that indeed the structure is as you expect. And it's an important object. Physically, it is related to the radiation of to radiation of an accelerated particle, and it has beautiful physical applications. And it's an interesting kind of Wilson loop. Then, in the second problem, I'm asking you to compute the one loop, Wilson loop, for null polygons. So when you have a polygon, something, for example, you can start by a rectangle, which is null, and I'm telling you to compute this Wilson loop at one loop, so to sum these diagrams, and to compare this with scattering amplitudes of four particles, for example. Because I told you that this was equal to this. So I'm telling you to compute this, open the paper who computes the left-hand side, and check that they are the same. For 4, 5, 6, and 8 particles. Then the next problem is about quark anti-quark potential. So in the tutorial, did someone get to the rectangle in ADS-CFT in the tutorial, or did you all go only up to the circle? No? No one got there? So this is about the rectangle in ADS-CFT. You consider a very, very large rectangle, so it's basically two infinite lines. You have to study the shape of the surface between these two lines. That is the trivial part. Okay, you study it, you get some result, and this gives the leading form of the potential. And then comes the more complicated part of the problem, which is the last part, which is, okay, you have the classical surface, and now you can compute quantum corrections. How do you compute quantum corrections in any field theory? You expand around the background and compute the one-loop determinants, right? Around that background, you compute the quantum determinants around that background. And that gives the correction to the one-loop correction to the energy. So you have your string solution, you say that the string is what it is plus delta x, you expand, you get a quadratic action, you compute the fluctuations, you have a Laplacian, you compute the determinant of that, and so on, as you learn to compute determinants in field theory, and that gives you k1. The last problem is about localization, is to precisely work out the details of this argument that I very briefly hand-waved what the idea is. And all these problems require reading some papers and thinking a bit, and they are tough, and therefore I'm only expecting you to solve at most one or to try to solve a bit. I mean, try to solve until you get stuck on each of them, and that will be fine. Okay, thank you.
I've probably seen Pedro have an amazing collection of t-shirts. I think this is probably one you don't have yet.
I have three, actually. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Four.